I want to start by telling you what tonight's not about. When I say tonight's not about, I mean both here in this session, but because you're in this session and the Lelian at large. It's not about a conversation whether AI is good or bad, and it's not a conversation whether you should use it or you shouldn't use it. The real reason that's not the conversation is because it's kind of a moot conversation. The reality is that I'm going to guess almost all of you, if not all of you, are using it already. But more than that, as you get older and as you seek a career, I'm going to guess that almost all of you in your career are going to be mandated to use it. By the time you guys enter the workforce, it is really hard to imagine that you won't be mandated. You will have to use AI in almost any field that you are in. Medicine, law, accounting, coding, whatever the profession is, business, it's almost hard to imagine that you won't be using it on a day-to-day basis. So our conversation is not really about whether you should or shouldn't use it, the ideology behind that. What I do want to talk about a little bit is how we use it, but more than how we use it, I want to talk about what I'm going to say, what's humming in the background of AI, what's going on in our brains, in our minds, and what's pushing us to use it. What is it about AI that is so alluring, that's so exciting, that makes us want to use it? We're going to talk a lot about the excitement around AI, what that excitement is, and we're going to try our best to frame what the challenge, and I would almost say the chisaron, in that excitement is. I was recently having a conversation with someone. It's not so important, but the person's older than I am, so it's not talking about having a conversation with a 20-year-old or a 15-year-old. I was having a conversation with someone, and we were talking about what you would use AI for, what you wouldn't use AI for, and I was kind of saying how I would never use it in something very personal. And we were talking about things like giving a eulogy, right? When someone unfortunately passes away, would never use AI to write a eulogy. And this person said to me, why not? And I was a little bit surprised, you know, why not? We'll use it. Yeah. He said, I know someone who recently was trying to write a eulogy, was trying to write, get their words down, trying to explain what they wanted to say. They couldn't get it articulated the way they wanted to. They put the ideas into AI, and wow, look at that. A beautifully written, perfect eulogy expressing exactly what they wanted to say. We're talking about, again, different feelings. Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I know in the survey today we talked about getting an anniversary card, one of the sessions tonight. You know, do you use AI to write your anniversary cards, a birthday card? But I was a little bit caught off guard. I want to talk about another conversation with AI. Probably the most common conversation that I have with AI, I can't imagine it's that different than conversations that you have with AI, it starts with something like, you got to see this. You got to see this. You got to see what it can do. Just yesterday, in Madrich and the base Madrich was showing me, you got to see what it could do. Give me a picture. Take any picture. I'm going to guess that you guys have all seen this already. I had not seen it yet. Give me any picture. Right? We'll change the outfit, we'll change the location, we'll do this. He was very cute. He was showing me all the ways you could take a picture, right? It was a picture. He said, watch, I'm putting Knicks jerseys on these guys, right? Okay, boom. Take a picture of two guys in the Kol HaBeis Medrash. All of a sudden, they're wearing Knicks jerseys, sleeveless shirts, the whole thing, right? It looks pretty good, right? Pretty good. Put them in a football game. Put them in this venue. Put them in Vegas. Put them wherever you want. You can take the picture of these people, put them wherever you want. Super cool, right? Let me show you something else, right? Someone recently showed me, again, I don't know why they chose this, but they said, give me a mesechta. AI is going to summarize the whole mesechta like a Dr. Seuss book. It was pretty cool. Put it in. AI took, I think it was Sukkah, and was like summarizing the whole mesechta as if it was a Dr. Seuss book like that, right? Dr. Seuss language, the whole thing using Sukkah, the language, wow, pretty cool. You got to see that, right? Someone said, look at this. I'm going to put a recorded shear into AI. They showed it to me, put a recorded shear into AI, and in 1 second, it's going to make a slideshow, right? Again, maybe you guys have seen all this. I had not seen all this. In the last month or two, I've seen a whole slideshow, right, of that shear. It's unbelievable what it could do within seconds. It's a whole slideshow, pictures, explanations, arrows, charts. It's the whole shear summarized. Someone else, another madrash just showed me the base madrash. You think that's cool? I'll show you this. The OU just came out with an AI. Give me any topic in Torah, any topic. It's going to give you a sheer outline, a source sheet, discussion topics, engaging ways to lead it, right? And they showed it to me. It was, I would say, 80 to 90% accurate. That's pretty cool. Within seconds, a beautiful source sheet, well-organized, the Ritva versus literally the whole sugya, right, out there in 1 second. And we see it, and anyone says, wow, cool. that's really cool, right? That is, it's cool. It's hard not to be amazed, but it's not to be like, wow, your jaw drops a little bit. And I'm sure there's a million things that I haven't seen that it could do, right? That it's doing all the time, right? And it's really, really cool. And in a work setting, right, people are using it. And if you're not using it, right, you're out of a job, right? They know, right, that it makes everything, right? It makes flyers, right? We make flyers now in seconds now with AI. It's amazing. We made the flyer. I'll tell you a secret. We made the flyer for tonight's Lelian with AI. We had a flyer that we made 5-6 years ago, really well graphically designed, right? And we said, we took the information for this one and said, make it look like the one we did 5 years ago. And within seconds, it made the same flyer. Just changed all the titles, right? The times, the date. It's amazing. That's a really cool tool, right? And it saved us a lot of time. And honestly, it could save you money, right? You don't have to spend money on a graphic designer anymore. You have AI that could do everything for you. So what I want to do tonight is not talk about, again, right, wrong. It's not the words I want to use. I want to talk about two things I think that happen in our minds when we see these things. And it really has to do with the topic that I gave tonight, which is better is the enemy of human. And I'm going to make two, I think, very important points about this. And what I want you to walk out with tonight, I want to be very clear. The goal is that you walk out and you think a little harder when you use it and what it is doing to you when you use it. Right? To know, right? To know what it's doing to you when you use it and to know what the allure is. Why are we so gravitating to this? And what are we losing when we rely on it too heavily? So the first is by way of analogy. Mirtz Hashem, some of you sooner, the Madrichim, some of you a little later, right? Some of you even very, very soon in the room will be parents. And, right, when you become, my daughter's in the room back, she's due in a month. When you become a parent and your kids start to go to kindergarten, so I like to say there are two types of kindergarten projects that are sent home. There are two types of kindergarten projects that are sent home. There are ones that look amazing. You're like, wow, like I would almost like frame this. Like all the glitter is like in the right spot. Like it's a perfect frame. My kid's in the center. Like it's, wow, it's pretty cool. Like it's amazing how good it is. The only problem is that like when you stop for like a half a second longer and like think about it, you're like, my kid didn't make this. I know my kid didn't make this because they're like 3 years old and there's no chance they would have the skill to make it, the patience to make it. And like there's just no way they made this, right? So you're like, wow, this is like super cool, right? It looks nice, right? But it's not actually your kid's work. And there's another type of project that comes home that's literally like scribbles on a paper. There's lines everywhere, drawings, different colors. You can't make sense of it. And like you show it to your kid though, and it's tried and true, right? You know, you talk to them about that picture, right? And they're able to tell you what everything is. Oh yeah, that's Moshe hitting the rock. You're like, okay. I see it a little bit. Okay, I see you tried making a person, right? And they're just holding us. You're trying to figure out what they drew. They learned this thing in the parasha. Their Mora said, take a few minutes and draw this story, right? And you're seeing the picture, and you're like, oh wow, like you don't really see it, but you're trying to talk about it with your kid, right? And while it looks terrible, right? While it looks like not like a work of art you're going to frame, as a parent, you're actually like, you're much more engaged in it. You're excited by it, right? Because you say, wow, this is really my kid's work, right? The other one might look better. It might look better on the outside, right? But it's not my kid's work, right? So it actually is less exciting. And even, not always, like, your kid's not even excited about it because they didn't do it. So they're not even like that excited about the fact like their teacher like painted everywhere and said like, just like, we're going to hold your hand while you paint over this line. Like the kid knows even at 3 years old, like it's not really my work, right? It was the Mora who held my hand and painted over the tape and got that line right there. Like, no, your kid made the whole thing, right? Again, it looks great, but it's not your kid's work. And as kids get older, I'm not even yet at adulthood. I'm at like 7th, 8th, 9th, certainly like 10th, 11th grade, all of a sudden, these expectations shift, and it's not even your fault. The expectations shift, where all of a sudden, right, like an essay has to look like a perfect essay, right? All of a sudden, it's like, why am I getting a C on my essay? I barely know how to write, right? And again, it's a nuance in teaching, and I'm not getting into every teacher's class, but the point is that all of a sudden, this expectation changes from like, it should actually look like a 15-year-old's writing, right, to like, it almost has to be like a perfect essay, right? And what happens is, right, there in that moment, I will say 20 years ago, right, or maybe even 10 years ago, right, but certainly when I was in high school, right, a kid who wanted to write a good essay and couldn't, this is what happened all the time, is you paid someone to write a good essay for you. That's what you did. I remember it happening all the time, right? You pay someone to write a good essay for you, right? I can't possibly write that essay that this teacher wants. My skills aren't there, right? So I'll pay someone. Did it happen every day? No, but it happened, right? It happened. You said, I can't do this, and I'm going to get someone who can do this, right? Now, what happens now, right, is that we have a tool, right, that's actually much faster and much easier, right, and much better than paying someone, and it's free, right? Which is we put this in ChatGPT. We say, fix this up. Maybe we say, because we're real smart, make it sound like a 15-year-old wrote it who can't write, right? We do all the shtick to make sure that our teacher. But the point is, right, we have something else, right, that takes our imperfect essay, right, and makes it what I'm going to say, quote, perfect, right? It's quote, perfect. The problem is, right, and I'm not even getting into the grade, school, you trick the teacher. I'm not getting into that. It's not you. The problem is not you, right? So it's so nice that you got an essay that looks like it could get a good grade. That's amazing, right? You tricked the teacher, right? But you know it wasn't you, right? And it wasn't you, right? So what happens is now in the search for better, which is what our title is, in the search for better, right, you lose you, right? So it might be better. Right? It might be better, objectively. If you gave it to two people, read this essay, read that essay, it might be better, but it's not you. I want to tell you guys a story. I'm a principal of a school in Florida, and we had two boys for two different reasons. They had a consequence that they had to write an essay on a topic during their free period, during their gym period. Okay? Each boy, for whatever reason, had to write an essay. The first boy gave me an essay, and again, it wasn't for a class, it wasn't for a grade, it was like kind of like, it was like so easy to tell within like 1 second that he used like AI. It was just so obvious. It was like, he used AI. And again, I was like debating, do I like make it a whole thing, like make him do, I was like, you know, like whatever, the whole thing was like a consequence for one period, like I'm not going to make it a whole thing, right? But literally within the week, another boy gave it an essay that was, and I say it's not as a joke, and the boy's not here, it was like a terribly written essay. But it was so real. It was so real. It was like this boy wrote a whole beautiful essay, right? It was his words. Everything was clearly his, right? It was typed. It was on a computer. But it was so clear that he didn't use AI because it was so clear. It was his. It was his writing, right? And I told him, I'm so proud of you. I could tell that for the last hour you sat there and you really wrote something that was meaningful to you. I was so proud of him. And again, it wasn't about like taking the first guy. Like the second guy, he really put his heart into it. He was proud of it. He was proud of it. He was showing it to people. He's like, look what I wrote. He said, can I show it to people? We printed it out. Look what I wrote. I had to sit for an hour. And they made me write, and look what I wrote. And he was proud of it because it was his, right? It was his. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down at us, bringing this into our religious life specifically for a minute, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down from us from above, he doesn't want to see perfection. He wants to see us. He wants to see our Torah and mitzvah. So we can make Torah and mitzvahs look really good. We can do that. We can make Dvar Torah look really good, right, that we need to give on our Shabbaton or we need to give to our Shabbos table. We can make it look really good. We could put ChatGPT in 1 second and say, give me Dvar Torah on Parshas, right, Ves Chanan for our Dvar Torah. Great. And we could get one. And it could sound good and we could give it over, right? But what's going to be meaningful to you and what's going to be meaningful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that it was yours. It might not sound perfect. You might even make a mistake. The grammar might not be perfect, but it's you, and it's yours, right? That's what's going to be meaningful. There are many, many sources, many, about the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashem created us chaser, which means lacking. He purposefully created human beings chaser. We were made imperfect. Hashem made us imperfect. Hashem could have very easily made us perfect. There are a lot of sources, and there are a lot of examples, even in our physical world, right? I had a teacher, I don't mean to be like a little bit... you know, at a teacher who used to say to me in high school, not to me, say to our class all the time in high school, he used to say to us, right, that I don't care if you're the president, the biggest actor, the biggest celebrity, or a kid in this class. This is what this line he said, I apologize to be a little crass, but the line always stuck with me. He said, everyone when they go to the bathroom, it smells. That's what he said. He said it to us. Everyone when they go to the bathroom, it smells. And his point, it was a very powerful point. His point was, like, you know, you could think you're all that, right? We know Paro used to, like, hide when he went to the bathroom, the Medrash says, right? At the end of the day, we're all human, right? We're human. We're created imperfect. Hashem purposely created us imperfect, right? There's a Medrash in Parashat Tazria, right? It's a funny thing. When we're born, right, what do? We just did it this morning with David Meyer Eisenstein in our base Medrash, right? What do? We give a bris milah, right? It's such a funny thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a baby, and the baby is created imperfect and says, within 8 days, perfect my baby, right? It's a funny thing. Hashem could have very easily made us born mahal, born with a circumcision, right? It's not hard, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do anything, right? But it's a message. Hashem is saying, I'm creating you imperfect, and I want you people, right, to perfect what's going on here. There are a lot of sources about it. If you want them, I can give you them after this year. I want to give you one amazing source, though. It's a Chassam Sofer on Parashas Ekev. The Chassam Sofer says in Parashas Ekev the following. If we eat, right, we have a drink, we have water, we eat something that's a shahakol, or something that doesn't require a benching or alamechia, so we make what we call a berei nefashos, right? You ever stop and think about the words that you say berei nefashos, right? So we say berei nefashos, rabos, v'chesronan. We think Hashem, berei nefashos, rabos, the one who created nefashos, rabos, many souls, v'chesronan, and they're lacking. And says the Chassam Sofer, such a strange bracha. We're thanking Hashem for creating us lacking. Like, just thank Hashem for creating us. Thank you, Hashem, for creating all these souls. Thank you for creating food. Thank you for filling up what we need, right? Thank you, Hashem, for creating us, v'chesronan, and our lacking. So it's very strange, Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says, no, it's not strange. That's exactly what we're doing. When we eat, right, we're saying, right, when we eat food, right, we're saying we can't sustain ourselves. We need other things to sustain us. We are lacking, and we're thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're lacking. We're saying, wow, thank you, Hashem. Right? Thank you, Hashem, that you created me lacking. Because we were created perfect, we'd have no purpose in being here. There is absolutely no purpose for us being in this world if we were created perfect. The only reason we're in this world is because we are imperfect. And our goal is to work on ourselves and to work harder and to create ourselves. And I really think this point, point number one, is so important. AI is alluring because it gives us this feeling of almost like perfection. It's amazing. Look what it can do. Look how much it could create. And it's exciting. It can make almost me look like I'm perfect. But that's fake. It's a facade. It's not real. It's not you, right? Don't be, it feels vulnerable, but don't be ashamed of it. You're imperfect. That's great. You're imperfect. This is you, right? I read a book once by an author, Adam Grant. Fascinating point. They did a study of lawyers who have a lisp. Lawyers who stutter. Lawyers who stutter. They did a study about lawyers who stutter. And what they found was that lawyers who stutter are actually more successful. They make more money, right? They win more cases. They showed that a lawyer with a stutter, statistically, right, is much more successful than a lawyer without a stutter. And it seems strange. Adam Grant writes in his book, it seems strange, right? You would think, right, the guy who stutters, the guy who can't get a clear sentence out, he's not a good speaker, right? How is he winning arguments? How is he having a great closing statement? He's not going to be an actor on Law and Order. You know what I mean? Like, what's going on here? Why is he, right? So I suits, is that a better analogy for the room? Okay, right, he's not going to be, we got you. Okay, so, right, what's going on over here? Why is he a winning lawyer, right? So Adam Grant writes a theory, but he says he thinks the idea is, it's very powerful. He says that they're actually more human. He says they endear themselves to the jury, right? The jury almost feels like an emotional pull to a person who stutters, like, oh, look at this person, they're trying so hard. Like, they're trying to get the sentence out. And it almost like makes you listen harder and care, almost like connect to the person, right? There's a vulnerability there in their stutter that makes you connect them. And he thinks that's why they're more successful. People, juries, right, connect to them more. Their eyes are more locked in. They're more in with the stutter, right? It's very interesting, very powerful. But the idea is that the more someone's human, the more we're actually connected to them, the more we want to be a part of it, right? I was talking to Madroth the other day about this exact point. I want to say the point. He was asking me about, you know, again, making pictures. And, you know, if you could get the perfect picture, like, why are you drawing pictures? I said, it's such a bond. I bond with my students about the ridiculousness of how I can't draw a cow when I'm learning Baba Kama. Like, it's a bond. Like, they make fun of it in a nice way. Like, we joke about it. We made a sweatshirt for Yechiel Weistuk, who's a Madrichir. I just said this example. Yechiel Weistuk is a Madrichir. We made a sweatshirt with his class of, like, the stick figure cow that I used to draw in Baba Kama. We made a whole sweatshirt because it was a fun. It's connective. So I could have a perfect cow, and it wouldn't be a discussion piece, right? But part of it is the human part. It's not a perfect drawing, and let's talk about that, and let's connect on it, right? When things feel perfect, it doesn't feel human, and it doesn't feel connective. It doesn't feel, right, we want to connect to it. Point number one. Point number two. If I asked everyone in this room, I would guess, we're not going to take a poll right now, but for most high school students, I've been doing this for a while. For most high school kids, there's like this irony almost, or it's not an irony. They spend the most time learning Gemara, and they have the hardest time with why in the world they're learning Gemara. It's very common. I've dealt with it for many, many years, right? Why are we spending so much time learning Gemara, right? There's nothing more frustrating, right? Kids complain. We just did a whole amud, and it ends with like a teku. Like, are you joking? Like, that's the Gemara. We just did like back and forth. There's no answer. They couldn't even like save us the time like of breaking my teeth for this last page. And, like, there's no answer. It's a teku. Like, it's, like, frustrating. I get it. It's frustrating. What's the halacha? Like, I'm trying to know. Like, almost like I spent all my time in this. I invested in this. I want to know, like, what's the bottom line? Like, what's going on here? What's the answer here? It's very frustrating. And it's legitimate. It's a real complaint. And I'm not invalidating the complaint. I'm validating the complaint. It's hard. It's frustrating. It's difficult. And it's hard to read. So I want to talk about Gemara. And I want to talk about, even before we get to, like, the value of Gemara, I want to talk about what Gemara is, because there's a little bit of a misunderstanding. It's a Rambam. I'm going to tell you a Rambam. It's a misunderstanding of what Gemara is. So the Gemara in Kedushin, on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, says that a person is obligated to split their Torah learning into three parts. Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud. That's what the Gemara says. You have to learn three different things. The Gemara says every day, actually. Three different things. Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud. I'll tell you guys, this is non sequitur, not the main part of the shiur. When we make Berachas HaTorah in the morning, everyone should make a Berachas HaTorah in the morning. When you make a Berachas HaTorah in the morning, immediately afterwards, you say Psukim, a Mishnah, and a Braisa, right? The idea is actually to learn immediately Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, right? After that, when we say Karbanos, we say Psukim for Karbanos, we say Mishnayos, Beis Mekoman, and we say a Braisa, Rabbi Shmuel Omer. Again, Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud. The idea is, Rav Amram Gaon instituted, that every day, if you're not going to, on your own, learn Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud, which you should, but if you're not going to, we're going to give it to you in the Siddur, right? Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud. So what is Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud? What is it, right? So you're going to tell me, Rabbi, I know what it is. Mikra is Pesukim, Mishnah is the Mishnah, and Talmud is Gemara, right? It's not true. I want to explain to you it's not true. It's not what it means, and I want to understand it. Mikra means every single day you should learn Torah Shebichtav. Torah Shebichtav is the written Torah that Hashem wrote down to us. Every single day, find time to learn the written Torah that Hashem wrote down for us. What's Mishnah? It's the oral Torah, Torah Shebaal Peh. Every day, we are obligated to find time to learn the laws of the oral Torah. Hashem said, learn this every single day. Okay, so what's Talmud? So, again, if I ask most of you, I'm not asking you, it's rhetorical, you'd say, it's Gemara, right? We learn Gemara, that's what we do. We spend all these hours learning Gemara, right? That's what Talmud means. But I want to explain to you, and this is maybe the most important I'm going to make the whole night, that's not what Gemara is. It's not what Talmud is. Talmud, the Rambam says, I'm going to read you the Rambam, it's the only thing I'm going to read inside. The Rambam says Talmud is, Yavin v'yaskil acharis davar mirishasa v'yotzi davar midavar v'yidame davar ledavar. The Rambam says that you want to know what Gemara is? It's Yavin. You should comprehend it. Yaskil. You should have Seichel. You should have wisdom. Acher is Davar Meirishah. So understand the end based on the beginning. V'yotzi Davar Midavar. And bring out new ideas. V'yadam Adavar Ledavar. And compare things. Meaning, I'm going to translate that into simple English for you. Gemara is to think about the Mishnah that you just learned. Meaning, you're going to learn Mikra, set text. You're going to learn Mishnah, set rule. You're going to learn Gemara, we want you to think. Think about that which you just learned. That's what Gemara is. Gemara's goal is to get you to think. Now, what happened was, over time, this is what happened, is that people were forgetting the Gemara, and it was too important to the Masorah, so we wrote it down, and now we have what we call the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. We have what we call Gemara colloquially, but that's not what it's meant to be. When we sit down to learn every single day, we're supposed to learn Mikra, learn some Torah Shebichtav, Mishnah, learn Torah Shebaal Peh, and then think. Think about that which you are learning. And this is not a muster to high school kids. This is actually like learning across the globe. We do a lot of learning. Baruch Hashem, it's amazing. It's amazing. But sitting and just reading a Gemara is not Gemara. I know it sounds funny. It's not. It's not the goal. The goal is to think, to stop and say, wait, what does this mean? Does that make sense with the last thing? Does that make sense what I learned 3 days ago? I don't understand that. Maybe I should ask Rabbi Sobolevsky in the Beis Medrash. I'm confused. What's going on over here? I thought I understood this, right? It's to actually think and understand it and comprehend it. Does this still make sense in 2026? Okay, maybe the halacha changes. Rabbi Tani Cohen's giving a shiur right now on that exact topic, right? Does this make sense? I have to think about it. I have to understand it. I have to process it. Here's my second point. It's a little deep. Listen carefully. AI is all product and no process. AI, say that again, is all product, no process. That's what's actually so cool about it. What's so cool about it is that you put in a prompt, and within 10 seconds, it has all the information for you. Super cool. Cool it is, right? Super cool. You put in a prompt, in 10 seconds, it's got Maseches Sukkah written like a Dr. Seuss book. That's super cool, right? 10 seconds, take a picture of me and Beit Meir, and put me at the NBA Finals in Madison Square Garden. Cool. Very cool. I'm next to Spike Lee. I got my arm around him. Cool. Very cool. It's just a product. There's no process. There's no thinking. There's no developing. There's no working. Right? It's just product. It could be an amazing product. It could be that when you get a job one day, your boss is going to say, we want a lot of production. I'm going to use that word purposely. Production. We want you to produce a lot, right? Because it's all product, right? We want to get more end goal because that's the goal. Gemara is literally the exact opposite. And it's what frustrates all of you, and it's why it's more important now than it's ever been in the history of the world. Gemara is all process and no product. Let me say that again. Gemara is all process and no product. If you want to know the bottom line halacha, and this is what frustrates high school kids, you don't open a Gemara. If we wanted you to just know halacha, we would learn Shulchan Aruch all day. That's what we would do. We don't want you to just know the halacha. We actually want you to go through the process of thinking and understanding and contemplating. And sometimes you're not even going to get an answer. I know, it's frustrating. Because not every question has a good answer. And sometimes you're going to work on something you're not going to know in the end. And you're going to leave it in your notes saying, I'm not sure. I don't really understand this. You're going to sit 45 minutes and try to understand. You're going to be like, yeah, I don't get it. And that's beautiful. That's awesome. Because Gemara is all process and no product. The problem with AI is that it's all product and no process, right? And when there's no process, going back to our first point, there's no you. There's no you in it, right? The you that's going to feel awesome, that's going to feel good, and that's going to grow, right, is what you're going to give into it. I want to be clear. AI is cool. AI is a tool. It's something I use it. I use it. I don't not use it. I use it. Right? We have to figure out how to use it. We have a session on that. Next slot. You can go for the Madrichim. How to use it, how not to use it. There's a lot of conversation about AI. But I really want to hammer home these two points. It's really one point, but it's two points. Our goal is to grow ourselves. That's why we're here in this world. That is literally why we are here in this world. We are only in this world to try and perfect ourselves, to work on our imperfections and to grow ourselves. So every time that we use AI, right, as a shortcut, certainly in our learning and in our Avodas Hashem and in things that are related to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but even in other areas of life, when we use it as a shortcut, as a trick, as a way to write our essay for us, right? So what we're doing is we're cutting out the me. Right, we might get a better product. It might look better, but it's not going to be you. And ultimately, whatever is you is what's going to grow you. Right? To sit, sorry to make a 1 minute plug, but I'm a big believer in this. To sit and write an English essay, right? It's sad. It's becoming a lost art. To sit and think about, what do I want to write this essay about? What's my thesis? What do I want to argue? It's a huge value. It's a real skill to sit and say, what do I want to write about? Not put in ChatGPT, right? I need to write an essay about, you know, the Industrial Revolution. Can you give me some good topics? No, think. What do I even want to write? Forget even getting right to the essay. Even just to think, what do I want to write about? Sit and think. What do I want to write about? Right? That's an amazing thing, to sit and think and to process it. And then to put pen to paper and actually write something, right? And it's yours, and it's not going to be perfect. And it might get a C. I'm telling you as a Rebbe, beautiful, get the C. Get the worst grade, right? I had a kid complain to me this year. A kid complained to me, came to my office, and I felt bad for him. He said, Rebbe, it's not fair. He said, I'm the only kid in my class not cheating, and I'm getting a worse grade than everyone. He said, I don't know what to do. He came to me really upset, and he's a good student. He said, I don't know what to do. It's not fair. I'm the only kid in my class not cheating. And he had like a B minus, I think, a very good student. He said, it's not fair. I'm an unfair advantage. Every kid's using AI. The teacher's not catching it. So they're getting A's, and I'm getting a B minus. I said, it's not fair. So behind the scenes, I was trying to deal with it with the teacher. But in the front scenes, what I said to the kid and what I really believe is I said, you're better off. I said, you're better off. You may be getting a B minus right now, but I promise you your B minus is worth a whole lot more than those A's. Right? It is. It's the truth. It's your work. It's your effort. It's your soul. Right? It's you. Right? And you're going to grow from that in a way that you might not appreciate when you're 15, but I promise you, you will. So Chevra, better is the enemy of human. Our goal is to be a human. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he looks down at us, to go back to our analogy, if there are two products that we could put out, right, and one is a kindergarten project that looks perfect, it looks perfect, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows that it wasn't really our work, it wasn't really our effort, right? So we can imagine, we literally sit and imagine it, right? Again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, cool, that's cool. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees the sloppy, messy project, the one where it was all your work, where you can't figure out what exactly is going on here, but he sees this is you, We have to imagine, Kadosh Baruch Hu's got a huge smile on his face. He says, wow, look, that's you. That's you. I see the you, the real you. And the real you will get better, and it'll get better, and it'll look more perfect. But the goal is, Borei Nefashos Rabos, V'chesron, Kadosh Baruch Hu created us, and he created us chaser. He created us lacking, and that lacking is why we're here in this world. If we weren't chaser, we wouldn't be here. The moment that we fulfilled our tachlis, we're not here in this world anymore. Right? So our goal is to realize that we're imperfect and to embrace our imperfections and to be people and not to just become machines. Thank you guys. Have a great night.